like butterflies and stinging like bees. Rumble, young jet pilots, rumble. I'm Drew Brown here. We hope to inspire you. We hope to entertain, and we hope we all learn something. Welcome to the Wingman Show. I'd like to introduce to you my main man, my number one guy, and my wingman, Dr. Paul Thompson. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good, Mr. Drew. You've just heard from Drew Brown, Dark Gable, the American Dream. He's the man, the myth, the legend. He's the pilot's pilot, the role model's role model, and most importantly, his royal fullness. He's definitely full. I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. Why do rap songs try to project an image of laziness? I don't do anything but get high, have girls, play with my guns. I'm a gangster. And if you bother me, I will F you up. That is my mission. And I need to say it as many cool ways as I can. No, two more. How much I got and how much better I am than you. I'm sorry. I forgot those two. Mm-hmm. I love rap music. You understand that? Mm-hmm. So if you got the funky beat, I don't care really what you say. Right. But I noticed that that's usually the theme. I don't think I miss one.
Right. Right. Well, it's counterculture. It's radical, revolutionary, attention-getting. And it's easy. Doesn't require any work for the listener. But you got to have a beat.
Okay. You know about Memphis. You know about 8-Ball MJG?
I've heard of him.
They're the bomb. When I used to stop Little Drew from listening to it, and that's how I got turned on to it. I'm like, hell no, you're not listening to this. Anyway, oh, he turned me on to Outkast too.
Okay, Outkast, okay. Outkast, all right.
Yeah, well, okay. I'm just saying, but not when they're 12, 13, 14.
Okay.
No, you can't say F and M and, you know, and they're very good. Now, wait, I love Outkast. But I'm just telling you, who turned me on to my music that I love now were my kids, because I wouldn't let them listen to the music. Right. You know, I just had to be a parent. I don't know. Right. It came natural for me not to. I don't want Little Drew cursing around me now. Taryn doesn't. But it's very uncomfortable. It just doesn't feel right.
Right, right, right. Same here. Yeah.
You know, like when you're around an older person, you have a lockdown on your mouth. Mm-hmm. You ever notice that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So anyway, back to rap. The difference between rap and hip-hop, rap is you using your voice as an instrument. Mm-hmm. The different beats in your voice, the different sounds, whatever, that's rap. Hip-hop is the beat behind it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you know this, but all those producers, what they are is beat makers. That's what mm-hmm. it is to be a producer.
Using other people's stuff. I guess they create a little bit here and there.
Oh, no, a lot of people. Timbaland, if you really get it, Timbaland is the bomb. Swiss Beats, there's a bunch of them. Dr. Dre, these boys come up with some beats, Jack. Eminem's beats, oh, no, they're rocking. And it's kind of funny. The only conscious rap group that had good funky beats that I love, Public Enemy. They had something to say. Chuck D, you know, Flavor Flav was the little hype man.
Right, right.
With the clock and everything, but Chuck D was for real. Chuck D said some stuff.
Remember what, 1980, Fear of a Black Planet? That was 1989. That was over 30 years ago.
Damn.
All those guys got AARP cards and grandchildren, maybe great-grandchildren.
The guy who did my father's book, Todd Snyder,
saw that.
He teaches English. He's the greatest guy. Very smart.
How old is he?
Way younger than us. Mm-hmm. But he's not a kid. He has a child, and he's a really nice guy. Anyway, he has a class at Siena College on the history of rap. It sells out every year. And guess who? He brings rappers up. He brought Biz Markie up. He brought Chuck D up. And they come, you know, they're on a talking circuit now, those guys. Okay. So when you said AARP, they're going around the country talking. Mm-hmm. They taught Lil Wayne's lyrics and Tupac's at Harvard.
My question is this, practically speaking, my education is a little bit limited. How much are these people paying for this? Are you telling me I'm going to send a child to school for $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $100,000 a year to learn the history of what did Mr. Spock really mean when he went like this? that kind of stuff.
The rap class is an elective, but the point was it sells out. It's closed, like one of the first classes that shut down because everybody wants it. That's all.
Yeah, everybody wants it, and they're gonna ace it because they're already trained.
Not true. No, not true. Todd Snyder really, I'm sure, gets into the theory. Rhetoric is what he teaches.
Okay.
He is a professor of rhetoric. How about that?
I'm going to compare that with studying thermodynamics. Which would be harder? All right. Everybody can run their mouth. That's the problem with a lot of colleges stuff. Yeah, well, I don't know.
Not true. Isn't it just to make a living doing what you love?
Well, to be an educator.
Isn't that the idea? It's not to be smart. The idea is to do something you love and get paid well for it. And if he's a good professor in English, which you and I both know that these kids today need to know how to speak English. So to get even deeper into English, like rhetoric, I think is interesting. But I think success has nothing to do with how smart you are or how much money you make. I think, honest to goodness, my definition is you love what you're doing, you try to get better at it, and you don't even realize you're making money at it. Like flying off an aircraft carrier during the daytime. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them flights were the bomb. Right. You know, flying to Paris, not in bad weather.
Well, perfect weather, like today.
Correct.
Yeah, many a time.
It's a beautiful way to make a living. So the idea, and so that's why these athletes, you know, if you can sign an athlete for $40 million and you're sending him to college just to get a job, he's going to college for the wrong reason. You're going to college to learn. Nobody talks about that part. You're going to college to exercise the thing called your brain. A lot of people have majors and do other things. And college, I think, just means you started something and you finished it. And it's a way for you, Paul, who has a corporation. You need 3 applicants. You need 3 people for a job. You got 600 applicants. And guess what? 16 of them have college degrees. You don't have time to read everybody else. That's what I think about college. I think it's something you start and something you finish.
It's funny. I asked Elon Musk about that. College, value college, a few weeks ago. I just read this. He said, strangely enough, believe it or not, he wasn't very high on it. I don't know if he lives that himself, but he wasn't very high on it. He said, I think college is good if you want to, you can party and learn how to do your chores.
Did he go to college?
Yeah, he did.
Okay, I have to interrupt. I've been doing this for 30 years. Everybody who says anything negative about going to college went to college. Every counselor in high school who tells a kid maybe college isn't your thing went to college. Mm-hmm. Almost every counselor, remember we don't do 100%. I bet you most counselors have children that went to school and went to college. So the only people I ever hear of people saying, you know, you shouldn't go to college, are people who went to college. I bet you if you go talk to a wino or somebody in a homeless shelter or somebody who's destitute and you ask them, hey, what do you think? Where do you think you messed up? I guarantee you they say it started in school. Started messing around in school. So that's what I think about Elon Musk. And also, I think he's on a planet now of money and reality that's not even close to ours. Not even close. So I don't take his opinion about that very highly.
I brought him up because I know you're buying his stuff, so I just thought.
I'm definitely buying his truck, and I'm definitely also buying that satellite. Please, Elon, if you could hear this.
Yeah, I didn't mean
it. Elon, if you can hear me, please give me Wi-Fi, please. I gave him $100. I put $100 deposit down on equipment in the hope that they'll have some satellites out here. So I live in paradise. We just don't have Wi-Fi.
Yeah. you give your dogs Wi-Fi.
They give me unconditional love, Paul, like you just can't believe. Yeah. I was doing bad for a while, right after I start flying. Mm-hmm. And guess what? They were with me every day. I used to go to the theater and watch Law & Order, SVU. I just didn't have it. You know, it wasn't a good season for me. But my dogs, every day, no matter what I do, no matter what I say, they're always there. Mm-hmm. And remember the joke I said? You know who loves me more, Katrina or the dogs? You know how I know it's the dogs? I locked them both in the trunk of my car one day. Right. And in 2 hours, I came back, opened it up, and only the dog was happy to see me.
That's right. That's an old joke, but that's true. Well, the dogs tell you how great you are all the time.
All right, Paul, why don't you tell me about police?
About the police. I've known a few police. I haven't had any major problem with it. Just a little fun and very mild harassment, you know, at the most. If you're smart, you try to avoid them, you know, in terms of getting in trouble. I've been pulled over. You can be pulled over for this and that, a sign. And I've never had any issues. Chris Rock had a thing he did a few years ago about how not to get messed up by the police. And it's a funny thing. I think I might have sent it to you. You know, he does it.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah, he does. I'll send it again.
Okay.
But there's some good lessons in there. But one of the things is, you know, I noticed there seem to be some people who get into involvement with the police a lot. You get that, you have a rap sheet. You've gotten in trouble again and again and again and again and again. And I think before we even talk about police, we can talk about some other stuff. The word no seems to be unknown to a lot of folks. They're not used to hearing no. And I'll digress a little bit. A friend of mine is a physician that we both know. Worked in a prison for a while. A state prison, a couple of state prisons. I think one in Tennessee and the other one was in Arkansas. And something he said he noticed that a lot of times, he said the state prisons are the worst ones. But he said that, he said in some cases the correctional officers were worse than the prisoners, in his opinion, just on interactions he had. And he was a physician. I mean, he was the doctor. He was a prison doctor. There was only one. He had a doctor, and he had a nurse, and that was it. He did surgeries and stuff. I said, wait a minute. How do you do surgeries? You know, who do you have helping you? Hey, I get the prisoners. I said, what? Yeah, I get the prisoners. What do you mean the prisoners? He said, well, everybody's not a gangbanger. Some of these guys have medical backgrounds and all kinds of stuff. Yeah, we do surgery with the scalpels and all that. They said they do good work. But he said he noticed that he never had much problem. He said the first day he went to work, he was scared to death. And then afterwards,
really?
It wasn't bad because they didn't bother because he was trying to help them. So he was welcomed. So he said he had a problem with one guy ever, just one guy acting crazy. But for the most part, you're trying to help him. You're helping him more than prison guards are. You know, you're okay. They do for you. But he did note that a lot of those that he saw locked up had a problem with what he called impulse control. An impulse to go do something. And I'd heard that before from other folks. I've heard it from people in education. You know, impulse control. Don't do that. Stay away. Maybe they don't hear it at home. Maybe there is no home to hear it from. There's no, you know, female authorities, no male authority generally, which is probably 2/3 of the problems. And then the police become involved. This is horrible, but, you know, because their families are so destroyed, there's no structure. And the structure, you know, comes through the criminal justice system. And by that time, everybody's destroyed. Nothing but sadness and bad news and depression. There's so many, you know, I remember growing up, you know, there were some gangsters in the area, but they were like good gangsters. The good gangsters would, you know, they might help.
Taking care of the community.
Oh, they do stuff. Yeah, they do stuff. I mean, they do chores and help move things and like that. And then after they, you know, did a favor or something, they went off and did their thing. Sometimes they would protect the neighborhood. I saw that a number of times. There was a guy that was very famous, lived around the corner. His father was the drunk. His mother was a nurse. Interesting combination.
Wow.
And yeah. It lived in a, you know, look, you know, pretty nice house.
He was an alcoholic. He had a disease of alcoholism.
The father did, definitely. No question. Yeah. I can still hear him singing as he walks in front of our house. I can still hear him singing, Mr. Harkness. But you know, his son, you know, sometimes there's someone give us a problem or whatever when we were like little kids or whatever. We just mentioned it to Joe. Problem gone. He had pulled with everybody, you know. We had no problem, like once or twice. Nothing. Smooth sailing. You know, realize sometimes, you know, sometimes gangsters can provide a very useful function in society.
Okay, but, you know, the George Floyd thing is about, the trial is about to happen. When we talk about police also, to me, it's critical thinking. Anybody, police, robber, bad guy, good guy, anybody with a badge, the ability to ruin my life, and a gun, the ability to kill me, I do everything I can to stay away from them, not to get involved, to even win the situation. Mm-hmm. So one of the things you can do is not do anything illegal. That's one thing. The next thing you can do is show respect, and you should show respect to anybody. The problem is there are bad cops. They happen to be highlighted a lot in the media. And I'm sorry to say the majority of good policemen don't get highlighted because it's hard to write a good story. It's easy to write murder. It's easy to cover a murder story. So the good policemen really don't get their due. First, my dad used to tell me that they shouldn't even be called policemen. All of them should be called peace officers. They should be trying to prevent crime. They should be there before. So they should all be called peace officers. That'd be the first thing we could do. The next thing is, and you know this in the Navy, you know, they were racist against me. It was hard for me to go through training, but everybody wrote everything down. Every flight, you know, they would give me an unsat and say I did a great something. You know, it just didn't make sense because they wrote everything down. They wrote everything down. And I guarantee you, all the bad police have records. The problem is they don't get in trouble. So if you really want to clean up the police, don't say defunding the police. So stupid. It's ridiculous.
Right.
What you do is you go in the jackets, you look at the bad cops, and you get rid of them. It's not that hard. Mm-hmm. It's not the police. What happens if you were a cop? You know, there's a couple things. I talk to Katrina all the time. There, you know, when they do kill somebody, there's a couple times. What would you do? You know, this one guy, they called the cops because a guy left the gas station grocery store with and said, I'm coming back to kill all of you. I'm coming back to kill all of you. They called the cops. When they got there, this guy had a big knife walking towards the convenience store to kill all of them. They had their guns drawn and they said, stop, stop, stop. This is the police, whatever you're supposed to say. They were yelling. What would you do, Paul? He's going in the door now. He's getting ready to go in the door.
Okay. At that point, put the knife down?
No, you've been telling him that. He's going, he's not listening to you. He's going in the store.
Am I the police? Am I the guy with the knife?
Huh?
Am I the guy with the knife or am I the police?
You're the cop.
Okay. I don't know, you know. You know?
No, I'd shoot him. That was my job. I don't want to be a cop.
Right.
Okay, that's just point blank.
Right.
I need to save lives. That's what I'm there for.
Right. So I'm going to guess this guy was shot.
Yes.
Fatally. Yes, okay.
Yes. I don't know. I don't remember the details, actually. I don't know why they don't shoot in the legs a lot.
Okay, you're taught typically... body, you know, maybe two of the body, one of the head, the point of control.
Can I just go back to George?
The torso is a bigger target. That's all.
Just correct. You got to shoot to kill. Once you're in the gun game, you're in the dead game. You're in the kill game. Yeah. You're in another whole level of a game.
Yeah, you're not watching Clint Eastwood shoot the thing out of his hand. Ricochet, which is, you know.
Or how about them, Mel Gibson and Danny Glover? Remember, Mel Gibson used to be able to roll around on the ground and shoot as he's rolling. Mm-hmm. And anybody who's been to a gun range knows that's not only impossible, like the cowboys would be shooting riding their horses.
Right. Accurately.
Boom, break the gun right out of the hand. Boom. George Floyd. That cop who had his knee on his neck. I haven't heard this in the media. I heard everything else but this. Who in the hell raised this man? Who in the hell took all the humanity out of this gentleman? And the three other guys kneeling on him also. I was not raised to kill a human being in that fashion. Are you kidding? He is handcuffed. You have already, and he had his hand in his pocket. See, I don't, there's something deeper than just killing a black man. There's something deeper in his soul that he was raised that he could actually physically do that. I just didn't hear about it. That's a problem, Paul. Those people should not have guns, and they should be taken out completely. Forget about the unions and the good. There's right and wrong, man. You cannot have people out there protecting people who are dirty cops. You just can't do it. And guess what? How about the Capitol? How about all you black and blue flag? You know, we're behind the cops. We're behind the cops. We're behind the cops. They were killing them cops. They were beating the shit out of those cops. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to hear it. They're a bunch of ignorant fools. Now I'm getting upset, and I probably should stop talking.
Okay, well, yeah, don't get your blood pressure raised too much. it's too late now. No,
it comes right back. Comes right back.
All right. There's a lot of messed up stuff. You know, the defund the police, I always thought that's more of a joke, an attention-getting joke. Nobody really wants that. Because, like, you know, well, if something bad happens and you can't handle yourself, who are you going to call if you want to call someone? At one point, there was no one to call. But, you know, who are you going to call? You know, Ray down the street, you know?
Ghostbusters.
Yeah, it's like that Chris Rock joke, you know, and he talks about that. Hey, you know, there's no police around. And I call up, you know, someone's breaking in. And I call, hey, is Ray there? He said, no, he's headed to your place. You know, you know, I mean, that's just crazy. You know, I've never been to Somalia, but that sounds like you're describing Somalia. If you wanted to defund the police, well, you need to have a replacement of some type.
It's a talking point, Paul. It's something that now they can use against you. It's just something like if it even came across a little bit, now that's their main, you know, even when you say, no, Joe Biden said, President Biden said, no, I don't believe in defunding the police. They're still yelling. He wants to defund the police, you know.
Right. It is talk. I mean, it's crazy. Defund the police. That's like saying, let's defund doctors and dentists.
All they want to do is send psychologists or therapists or have social workers actually do a lot of the work that the police are not trained to do. That's what they're trying to say, except that takes too long to say.
Okay.
It's just too many words for people to get to.
All right, now you're getting into something that the great grand Ayatollah speaks about all the time. And it ties into guns. It's the police, guns, and everything. It really ties into it. And it's worth considering. His position, and I think I agree with it, is that a lot of this stuff is because of what he calls crazy mismanagement. In other words, you got a lot of crazy folks who should be put away, put somewhere else, but they're allowed to just wander on the streets. I think starting the Reagan administration, they started to cut down on a lot of those mental health hospitals. That's a lot of your homeless. Because every time you see people, you know, wandering the streets and they're yakking to themselves, now that we get these things in our ears, everybody's kind of psychotic. You don't know who's crazy and who's just shopping at Whole Foods. I heard people kind of yelling at a woman, yelling at me. I told you to stop it now. I didn't do anything. I'm just getting some pickles. But she's got a thing in her ear. But she's talking like she's yelling to a bunch of Marine recruits.
Not too long ago, I always wanted to do a TV show called Bluetooth or Crazy. Because when you were just like you said, everybody didn't have it then. But right. There were certain people, they'd be walking down the street talking and they had a Bluetooth. So that was the name of my stupid show. Yeah.
But I've seen, I mean, when they Bluetooth or no Bluetooth, they walk around, they're yelling or they have a debate with somebody and they're debating with themselves or someone on the phone. You can't tell. That'd be a good game show. But another thing he talks about is not only crazy mismanagement, he said, how much is due to drug-induced mental illness? All the drugs.
Alcohol also. Alcohol also.
Okay.
100% whiskey also.
With young people? Are young people doing a lot of whiskey?
Yeah, of course. That's all they talk about is drinking champagne. That's whiskey. All of it's whiskey. whether it's hard lemonade, Mike's Harder Lemonade, Merlot, it's all whiskey. Whiskey. Mm-hmm. It's alcohol, period.
Yeah, but that's an interesting thing. He said, you know, drug-induced, you know, alcohol, mental illness as a source of a lot of modern-day problems. I said, you know, that's interesting to discuss. I haven't heard any real big discussions about it.
Paul, crack babies are now growing up.
They may be grandparents now. They're talking about crack babies in the 90s. Flash forward 30 years. They're probably grandparents.
I bet you a lot of them are in the state and federal penitentiary also.
And some people didn't like that term, crack babies, because there's a crack baby, well, a person of that generation on TV.
So what do you call them?
He was like 20 years old.
What do you call them when your mother is addicted to crack and you come out of the womb addicted to crack and you have to get off of a narcotic when you first start your life? What do you now call?
He wanted to be a child of God.
He is a child of God. Okay. He's still a crack baby. Now, nobody should call him that at that age.
Right.
But if you want to define why maybe he has some mental problems, you got to call it like you see it.
Okay. Yeah, he had a couple screws loose, but he had the mic, and he was compelling. But that's drug-induced mental illness. That's a big part of our...
He's right.
You know, and the inability to think and reason, and the first offense, you got to kill somebody. Because he looked at me funny. Define funny. I can't. He looked at me wrong. Define funny. What? Huh? You know, listen, you know, these are not rocket scientists doing this. But it's very common throughout the country.
Throughout the country. Everywhere.
Yeah. It's all.
There's mental illness. And, okay, then if you want to go into that, I'll tell you this. There is a stigma, especially with Black people, about mental illness. And where I come from, if you go see a psychologist, you're crazy. Where I come from, and I noticed not just Harlem, but the South is the same way. If you're seeing somebody like a psychologist or a psychiatrist, if anybody ever found that out, there's something wrong with you. And our egos, for some reason, don't want people to realize that there are things wrong with us. Remember Tony Soprano? The same thing in The Sopranos. Yes. Remember the one thing he didn't want nobody to know was he was going to get help.
Dr. Malfi. Mm-hmm.
You realize that is everything. You live between your ears. You don't live in Atlanta. You live between your ears. Wherever you go, there you are. If you could ever learn how to control your mental acuities, if you could control your emotions, control your actions, you should be in charge of it. Nobody's able to make you sick, Paul. I hear that. Ooh, they make me sick. You have to actually physically hold somebody down, shove something down their throat. Because if they were talking to you in Hebrew, you wouldn't understand what they were saying, and you wouldn't be sick. So nobody can make you sick. Mm-hmm. You should have a little hotel in your head, Paul. And when people come to bother you, just flash your sign. No vacancy. No vacancy. No vacancy. And don't let them in. They're not in a hotel. They can't mess stuff up.
Well, what do you think about this? There's a report I read today, and I've seen it off and on the last few months, about so many middle-aged people dying young, dying in the prime of life, even younger people now, across the spectrum. And maybe
really?
COVID and, yeah, mostly middle-aged people. But they're just dying of... diseases of despair, they say. Depression, suicide, drugs, and alcohol.
Wow.
The last like 5 years, 5-6 years?
I don't doubt it. The disease of alcoholism and drug addiction finally needs to be handled and needs to be talked about. The disease of mental illness, we all have it. It's funny when you say you're crazy. I love going to get help. If I can get better, I don't care anymore. See, I don't care how you think about me anymore. And I wasn't raised like that. Mm-hmm. If something's wrong with you, guess what? Go get it fixed. Right. That's how my daddy taught me. You know, don't lie to a doctor. So he used to tell me don't lie to him. But he was trying to say, if you go to a doctor and your ankle hurts, don't tell him it's your shoulder. It's the same kind of analogy. I'm into getting better. I want to be a better person.
Mm-hmm. Did you have your smoothie this morning? I did.
Yes, I did. 13 ingredients.
Wow.
Remember what I told you?
Yeah.
Ashwagandha, maca leaf, cinnamon, fiber, peanut butter, cocoa nibs, maca root, hemp protein, chia powder, flaxseed powder, coconut water, coconut milk, a big handful of frozen kale, and a banana, and molasses, blackstrap molasses. And that's what we drink.
Okay. Well, I didn't do all that. I did a good number.
What do you have in yours?
Nora's, I started with a little papaya, fresh papaya that I'd taken myself and it ripened. A little papaya, a little pineapple, one half apple, one whole lemon with the skin on it, a little piece of a carrot, two stalks of celery, a handful of cilantro, a handful of parsley, which does a lot of stuff, a big piece of ginger, no garlic, a little kombucha, the Irish sea moss, tablespoon, and a couple of the powders of the vitamin powder and the thing for your osteo joints powder. Just a little bit of kind of a cranberry juice mix and a bunch of ice. The sweetener is the vitamin powder itself and the apple and the lemon. The lemon picks it up. I had some kale too.
I love kale. It's a superfood. It is the highest ranking vegetable you can have. And I'm an overdoer. So if I'm going to eat vegetables, I might as well eat the best one. It's like five times better than collard greens and turnip greens. You remember, in order to have a healthy vegetable, you have to have a dark leaf vegetable. Mm-hmm. So things like romaine and iceberg, I think we said this before, but you can actually lose weight eating iceberg lettuce because it takes more calories to ingest it than it gives. You would actually die of starvation if that's all you had was iceberg lettuce.
Yeah, it's just water. It just turns into water.
Okay, let me ask you this. We were talking about something, and it leads us right into this. And that's fact number two, and that's be happy, have fun, be nice. Can you give me your thoughts about that?
Be happy, have fun, and be nice. I try to be happy. The fun is a little bit tougher with the pandemic. I'd like to travel more. But to be nice is real easy. I just try to be nice. Same personality you see is what I've been. Now, one thing the Ayatollah has told me, he said, you know what your problem is? You have what I call a case of terminal decency. He thinks I'm too decent. And he's the yin and the yang. I'm the yin, he's the yang. So we go together and it averages out, okay? Yes, yes, yes. That is true. Terminal decency.
You are one terminal decent person. God bless it. And I don't think you can get that. I don't think you can have too much of that. You're a very, very decent, Paul. You're a good, good guy. And you're very level, and that's why you're good for me.
That's good. And we should bring the Ayatollah on one time, and he could testify about
that. No, we'll have him. I'd love to.
The problems of terminal decency and what it can lead to.
The famous Ayatollah. If you want to talk about being nice, I think that that's the answer to everything, to living together. Because if you can be nice to each other, you don't have to agree with each other. You can still be nice.
Right.
If you're not mean to people, you can actually talk to them. As long as you're not trying to offend people. And how about this? When I used to speak in schools, I said, okay, I'm going to give you an early Hanukkah Christmas present. If you say these things, if you repeat after me, and you say these things the rest of your life will come 30% better. Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. Please, thank you. You're welcome. And God bless you when you sneeze. Mm-hmm. If you say those things for the rest of your life becomes easier. Being kind to somebody, Paul, you will find the best of that person. Anytime you put something else, they will put up a guard and you're not even talking to that person. And guess what? It's easy to be kind. It's hard to be an asshole. It's hard. And maybe not for some people.
I was going to say, some people are pretty good at it.
Yeah. They're static addicts. That's the word I was trying to look for. They're addicted to static.
Ah, static. Not, okay, just noise and crap.
Yes, and let me just finish real quickly on the other two. Be happy and have fun. Having fun. I have fun no matter what I'm doing. In Harlem, we always had fun, and we had nothing except maybe a ball, maybe some marbles, maybe a we used to play skeet with bottle caps and wax in them. Mm-hmm. We used to play this game called, my favorite, Hot Peas and Butter. So we had a flagpole in the projects, and that was base. Hot Peas and Butter. You took a belt, somebody's belt, and one guy went and hid the belt. Then everybody was at the flagpole, you know, with their eyes closed, can't see. Then everybody went out and looked for that belt. Hot Peas and Butter is you look for the belt, trying to bring people around you. If you found it, you can really beat the hell out of them all the way back to the flagpole. So you were looking for the belt and looking at other people at the same time. It was a lot of fun. And usually nobody got hurt mm-hmm. because, you know, get one whack. But it was just the fear of it. Mm-hmm. So I always had fun. Last thing, happiness. I think that is the ultimate goal for everything. I think happiness is the reason people want to be successful because they get the feeling of happiness. It's called endorphins. They take drugs because they want to feel happy, a false happiness. You know, people are addicted to things because they think it makes them feel happy. So if you could be happy naturally, there's no downfall. When you do drugs or whiskey, to make you happy, there's another, it's like an up and then there's a down, and the down gets steeper and steeper and steeper until you're done. So happiness is my goal. Now, how do I do that? I am in control of my own head now. It's taken a lot of time, but I got 34 more summers. I keep saying that because I'm 66. Next year, I'll tell you 33 more summers, but I got 34 more summers. And to me, it makes sense that every moment of my life, I should try to just be happy. I am not allowing people in my life, thoughts in my head that don't produce happiness. And maybe that's why I'm getting another little puppy. So instead of, because Great Danes don't have a long life. And it hurts so bad when they go. And the way I fill that hole is with another puppy. That's fact number two. Be happy, have fun, and be nice. Do you have a wingman story you want to tell us?
A good wingman story is just Albert Glenn. Albert Glenn is Captain Albert Glenn. He's the ultimate wingman because he's a wingman for hundreds of people, you know, that I know of. Hundreds, maybe thousands, but let's just say hundreds, where you're somebody that you can call up if you're in the world of aviation at any aspect of it.
Wait, time out.
Go.
Being a black person in the world of aviation, night and day from being a white person in the world of aviation. And that's what Albert Glenn was king of. So I'm sorry. I didn't want people to just think, you know, aviation, little problem. There's a whole nother level.
And the thing is that, you know, he's been a mentor to hundreds of people at various airlines, really around the world. And a guy, what does he ask in return? Nothing. Nothing. I've known him for almost 40 years. He asked for nothing. He's retired. He's been retired 2 or 3 years. He's busier now than he was then. If you ever spend any time with him, his phone is going. You know, you might be able to talk for if you're together in a car with him, maybe like a 10-minute period.
Correct.
Maybe 20. You know, you're eating something, food. It's going off. It's still going off. It's from passenger airlines, cargo airlines, commuter airlines, corporate airlines, this one, that one, ex-presidents of this one and the vice president of that one and so-and-so and so-and-so. And he's running a flight school in addition to.
Why don't you tell people his credentials, who he was, how I met him, what he was at FedEx?
Okay, FedEx, he was a vice president of flight operations for a period of time. He's a duty officer. He spent a lot of time in...
Excuse me. I don't mean to interrupt again, but how many black executives in aviation have you seen in your entire career there?
He was the only one I saw at that company, and I've read of a couple of others. On his level, I think the number is zero that I know of.
Yeah.
They may exist.
You're right. And I didn't ask you what the real numbers. I asked you how many you saw, because I haven't seen any other than Albert Glenn.
I'm thinking of Ebony Magazine and Black Enterprise. And all sort of stuff. No, not coming up with anything. No.
Tell his credentials. like you were telling.
He was basically a civilian pilot. So, you know, I won't say self-trained. Civilian pilot, he got his ratings, then he became a flight instructor and instructed lots of people, built his flight time up, and got to the point where, you know, he applied for an airline job and got one at FedEx. He was there, I think, a total of maybe 44 years, not flying and non-flying. He was well over, it's 40 plus. He started as a teenager when there was like no company. He's talked about sitting around the conference table and there's like 15 people in the room. Fred Smith is one of them. It's just a few guys. We've got this idea. Right. We'll see if it happens. And okay, you do this, you do that. They got little assignments and they did it. And I think he ran the call center. But even when I came on board the company, it was a fraction of what it is today. I knew everybody. You memorized everything you needed to know. There was nothing. Now it's 10,000 puzzles just to get on the property. So anyway, he's kind of like a day one person. He was also on the on the company's political action committee. He's been around a lot, he's seen a lot, and he's helped people. And if he couldn't do the help himself, he would guide people where they could get help.
The other thing about Albert Glenn is he does get paid back. You know how many people he's gotten to be? Black kids who never thought about flying. You know how many pilots he has under his belt? It's got to be numbers that are incredible.
I'd say just in impact, it's got to be in the mid or high hundreds. Just guessing.
And actually taught to fly. Not talking like most of us do.
Yeah.
Doing it.
Yeah.
I think he's a great wingman. I love Albert Glenn. Thank you, Albert, for everything you've ever done for me and every other pilot.
Yes. I call him the Golden Child.
That was a horrible movie with Eddie Murphy.
It was a terrible movie. Black Panther was done. A lot of it was done in Atlanta.
Atlanta has become Hollywood South.
Yeah.
Thanks to Tyler Perry. He's a great guy, too. I don't know if we have enough time to do all the stuff Tyler Perry's done, but he puts his money where his mouth is. All right, Paul. You know what we're doing? We're floating like butterflies and we're stinging like bees. Rumble, young jet pilots, rumble. Everybody out there, thank you so much for your time. It is our most precious commodity, and for you to spend it with us means a lot. What do you think about that, Paul?
I think it's great. Thank you for your attention. Have a good life. All the power.
Peace out. Bye-bye.